We are back. The Tarlhurst End is back to its good old self, talking here in episode 151 about Reading's action. Thank you to everyone who enjoyed episode 150 as we spoke to local band of the Amazons before they play the Hexagon. And, well, as we come back to talking about Reading, we are quite unfortunately back to talking about defeats, and that is how it's been since we were away. I'm Mark May, your host, and I'm joined by someone who I'm sure will find something good to talk about, won't we? Handbags Harris has joined us this week.
Will we? I'm not entirely sure about that, but yeah, we'll give it a go.
Yeah, we'll give it a go. There's some new signings and whatnot to talk about. Again, as always, I'll thank anyone who's been contributing to our Patreon campaign, who has let us know that we're doing the right things, always helpful as we look towards our new equipment and everything else that we're going to bring to the show. And also a quick word that the Star Hall of Fame, new additions to the Hall of Fame, is going to be made on March 20th, and we will be down there at the Badesi Stadium. No doubt the full details and everything will be released in due course. Anyone wanting to know, head over to the Star website, the Star Twitter account, and their base outside the East Stand. We will be there for that. And, well, let's get on with it then. It's Brentford and Sheffield Wednesday in the recap.
View from the Tarlhurst End. Recapping this week's Championship action.
So, Handbags, this was two games where we scored one goal, we conceded four, we had six shots on target, and, well, nothing to come away with it, quite frankly. Let's cut to the chase then. Was this the worst week of the season we've had so far?
Oh, blimey. The worst week. I wouldn't quite go so far as that, because, let's face it, the FA Cup is hardly high on our priorities. Regrettable to say that, as such a prestigious competition, but that's the way the football world these days. No, I don't think it was quite as bad as the week between Christmas and New Year, with the Burton and Birmingham defeats, and Bristol City, the 1 point from four, shall we call it. But yeah, it's not exactly one that's going to inspire confidence going forward, is it?
No, this is a strange one, and I think that, I mean, let's talk about the Brentford game first then, as it was the first game. It's a 1-0 defeat, hit the woodwork a couple of times. I just want to know, I mean, what has happened to Fortress Medeski? We've won three games out of our 14 home games this year. Was this a completely typical home performance for the season as it's been so far?
Well, it's not just so far, really. I mean, last season, having two defeats at home all season was very much going against the grain at the moment. You can go back at least 5 years of utterly, utterly shoddy home form. 14-15, I think, was 10 home defeats. 15, 16, 8, 9, something like that. Last season, obviously, the two. And then we're up to, what is it, 7, 8 home defeats now. So it's a problem that stems back years, going back to the McDermott days of 2012. So, I mean, the problem that we've got is, I mean, players, I'm a firm believer that players do respond to atmosphere, and let's face it, we're not exactly loud at the moment. We haven't been for a while, for those few years, presumably, really. But, you know, there's no atmosphere there, and supporters are turning up expecting the players to turn on a performance. They're not doing that. They haven't done that for years. And, you know, it's starting to bear fruit now. It's a soulless bowl. It has been for a number of years, and something needs to change.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure where we kind of go with that, in a sense as to this team. It has produced some good moments, and we have had the odd win. But, I mean, as you say, we go back to the last big win that Reading have had, and last year we didn't have any, even though we had only two defeats. This year we've not even got close to we've had a couple of three goal performances, but nothing more. And that is kind of the worry, I think, when it comes to the atmosphere at the moment, is that no one truly believes, turning up at the Medeski, that they're going to witness any potential of there being a 5 or 6 goal performance.
No, well, exactly, it's going through the motions, really. I mean, the supporters that are left, I want to say, they're turning up more because they feel obliged to, rather than because they generally want to. I don't speak for all supporters, of course, but the majority of people that I speak to are of that mindset. And I think it was earlier today that you put up Becca Ellen's well, I want to call it match report for Sheffield Wednesday. which absolutely nails it for me. She's absolutely got it spot on. It's a little bit of a chore. We're not getting anything out of it. It's starting to question whether or not we really want to go. And I don't really want to go at the moment because I'm not entertained. I'm not enthused. I'm not enthralled. I don't feel any connection to the 11 players on the pitch. I certainly don't feel any connection to the manager, particularly after some of his comments and the way that he conducts himself under the amount of pressure that he is right now. So I don't feel a connection to the club right now because of the way that things are going. And I think that is bearing itself out on the pitch.
I will say that on the TileStand.com there is Becker's report from Sheffield Wednesday. We have called it brackets, not a report, because it is almost an inquest into what's going on at the moment, and that is a very good read for anyone listening to this wants to jump onto the TileStand.com. The thing is, you say about Stam, after the Sheffield Wednesday game, where, I mean, we'll talk about that, the details of the performance in a second, you talk about his comments after the game. What he said after Sheffield Wednesday was that he felt we played quite well, to be honest, but if you're helping the opposition by losing the ball, then it's going to be very difficult to win. On his side's run of 1-11, he said that's how it goes, that everyone is working so hard to turn around. And this kind of feeling of that's how it goes at times, and just sort of saying, well, you know, football's getting the better of us, it doesn't feel like we're a massively proactive side at the moment. It doesn't feel like we're the team that's turning up and saying, we have you sussed as an opposition, we are going to beat you, we are going to run harder than you, win the 50-50s, etc, etc. And that's being borne out in, I think, particularly in the Brentford game and definitely in the Sheffield Wednesday game, how we react to goals being conceded. Because when a goal goes in, this team's head just completely drops off. And even when we're winning, that's happened as well.
Yeah, I can't dispute that. I think, I mean, that is a worrying comment. And when things aren't going your way and you're doing what you do, you're playing your 4-5-1, 4-3-3, or your 3 at the back or whatever, and it's not working, and you try and do something different, and 9 times out of 10, well, maybe not quite so high, maybe 8 times out of 10, that induces an improved performance, and generally, which would end up leading to an improved result. We played 4-4-2, I believe, up at Sheffield Wednesday, and we ended up with the same result. In fact, the 3 goals that we conceded, including the one against Brentford as well, all 4 goals that we've conceded are utterly, utterly horrific goals. If I was a defender playing Sunday League football, I would be ashamed of conceding that type of goal that we did. And it's not as though, you know, you take Antti Nyhyy, he's not exactly what you call prolific, but he's outpaced our defenders in the first one and outmuscled Liam Moore for the second. All right, it was a horrible mistake from Gareth McCleary to put us in that position. And then it's just so, so difficult to put a finger on exactly what is wrong, other than we're just not set up correctly. We don't, no matter how we play, the style of play is so routine, it's ingrained, there's no degree or seemingly degree of spontaneity, and we end up making silly mistakes, and at the moment we're being punished for them, whereas last season let's face it, we conceded a lot of chances in games last season. We had a keeper who had a habit of being in the right place at the right time, or sticking a hand in exactly the right place and turning the ball around the post or over the bar. We don't have that this season. We have I want us to call him a better all-round keeper, but his shot-stopping ability isn't anywhere near as good as Al Absey's. Hopefully that makes sense to the listeners.
No, I get what you're saying. I think Mannoni's been a good keeper, but he's not won us any points, if you know what I mean.
No, exactly. I mean, the only performers that I can consider that he was on a par with anywhere near Al Absey's shot-stopping ability was Forrest. And when he was making the saves, we were 2-0, 3-0 up at the time. Whereas Al Absey was making saves at 0-0, 1-0. We were conceding those chances through our own mistakes, but we weren't actually conceding the goals on the back of them. Now, having said that, the Sheffield Wednesday game was the first time we conceded 3 goals in a game all season, which perhaps tells a little bit of a story that we are better defensively. At least the statistics bear that out. But as we know, statistics don't necessarily tell the whole story. And ultimately, of course, the only statistic that matters is goals scored and points scored on the board, or, of course, through to the next round if it was a cup competition. But statistics can inform, and certainly can inform me and many others who base an argument not necessarily on the whole statistics. Obviously, football is a very fluid game. It's a human game. But they do show that we are now starting to find ourselves at the level that the stats tend to bear us out. Last season, if we were going purely by the statistics, we should never have finished anywhere near third. We did. You can get instances where there are, circumstances that are erroneous, shall we say. So we had a high number of penalties last season. We had a very, very efficient rate of taking chances that were created. We're nowhere near that this season. It's not as though we were creating chances left, right and centre last season either. I think we only scored 3 goals in a game on half a dozen occasions last season. We were winning games by 1 and 2 goals. But we ended up with 86 points. This season we're losing games by 1 and 2 goals. And those are the margins. And that tells me that the opposition, the rest of the division, has found us out somewhere in some way, shape or form. They're very, very disciplined. They were very disciplined last season, but we were good enough to beat them. And they weren't good enough to break us down and get that final, the finishing touch to to their moves. Whereas this season, they're getting 1 chance, 2 chances, 3 chances, and they're taking 1 or 2 of them and winning the game. Whereas we're getting 1 chance, 2 chance, and we're not taking them. And I think a lot of that can also be put down to not actually going out and getting a striker. I think if we'd have actually had Nelson Oliveira, I think we'd be much higher up the table. I think we'd have taken many more chances than that we've created. But that you still can't, you know, you're signing a striker is one thing, but it's not going to be the be all and end all as well if you're not playing correctly. You're not playing in a manner that is going to consistently achieve results. And the second season was always going to be much more difficult than the first for Yapstam. And he's finding that out right now, isn't he?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I find interesting about the whole Reading thing at the moment is that if you think of, you know, other people that we know watch football and watch other teams, and when they're going through a bad run, they say different things to what we're saying about Reading at the moment. Let's take, for example, a team that's getting thumped for 5 every week. They don't turn up thinking, oh no, we're not going to score a goal, it's going to be boring. They'll think, when's the first one going in? If we score, then the other team will just turn around and score immediately anyway, so it won't matter. We don't think either of those things, I think, as Reading fans at the moment. We're thinking, are we going to score a goal? How long will it be until we get bored? Will the team turn up and play exuberant, fast-flowing football this week? Generally, the answer to those questions has been no, even when we're winning. But with the defence, we're not actually turning up every week thinking, oh God, we're going to get absolutely spanked here. Because, as you say, we don't. That just doesn't happen at the moment. It's the key deciding moments in games that we're somehow falling down on. Maybe it's a mental thing. I think it certainly is to a large extent. Preparation as well comes into that. And I want to ask you now about the defining sort of question of the moment, really, is, are we in a relegation battle, and to what extent? Because there's only one other team that hasn't won a game in the last 6 in the Championship, and that is Hull, who are definitely in a relegation battle. They're not far off from us. Only 4 points from the bottom 3. Where do you think this sort of relegation battle sits for Reading at the moment? Is it the type of thing that we could actually find ourselves in the bottom 3 soon?
Very, very soon. I mean, tomorrow night is huge. And if you'd have asked me that at the start of the season, in the middle of, well, the end of January, going to Burton saying that's going to be an absolutely huge game for us, I'd have thought it would have been for our playoff chances, generally speaking. As it is, we're going to Burton thinking we've got to get 3 points. They're bottom of the table again. We know what's happened the last 2 times we played the team at the bottom of the table. One of those was Burton, and the other one was Birmingham. If we don't get 3 points tomorrow night, then, you know, well, that puts us on 32 points. We can only go up one position tomorrow night if we win, and that's obviously dependent on Sheffield Wednesday result, who are 3 points ahead of us. But we are 4 points above the drop zone. Anybody at this moment, in time, anybody turning around and saying no, we're not in a relegation battle is deluding themselves, quite frankly. And if we lose tomorrow night, that puts us within 2 points of the relegation zone, because Burton are on 24 points. They'll be on 27, we'll be on 29. Then we're definitely in a scrap, and we've got to start scrapping. We can't be pussyfooting our way around games like we are at the moment.
You know, I think it's actually one of the interesting things that I've noticed all season is that I've not at any point this season been thinking, oh, what is X or Y team doing? Who are they playing? But this Tuesday night, Birmingham playing Sunderland, you sort of think, hang on a second, that's the game that we need to keep an eye on. You know, maybe we have a say in how these games are going to go and who we want to see win, which isn't something we've been doing at all the season. We will talk about the Burton game a bit later in the end of the show to preview that. I do just want to say as well that anyone who's listening to this after the Burton game, what we've said about the club, I mean, it won't change with a win. Our feelings of it's not a case of, oh, we beat Burton 3-0, everything is absolutely happy days. I don't think that's going to be the case at all. So we'll see how the Burton game goes on. We'll talk about the Millwall game as well later on. And, you know, we'll leave the recap there for the moment, I think, because we've got some actual news to talk about as Reading Football Club this week. So we'll go on to that next in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So handbags, people have been saying that we need a striker, maybe we need a winger coming in, maybe we need a fullback even. We've got a centre-back. We've got Tommy Elphick on loan from Aston Villa. He won the championship with Bournemouth not so long ago, had a little stint with the South Coast team in the Premier League, played 12 games before going back to the championship, finding himself at Villa. He's now found himself behind John Terry in the pecking order, and he's come to us.
Well, it's a loan signing to the end of the season, isn't it? Paul McShane is apparently out for a significant amount of time, and I think you've got to take a look at it. If we're signing another central defender, does he go straight in? And if so, he must be going alongside Thiago Alori, replacing Thiago Alori. Sorry, who doesn't flatter me at all. So. I think
expecting Liam Moore to be going then?
I would very much doubt it. I think we'd have heard a lot of stuff through the grapevine. But star players going tend to be, if there are any bids or what have you, they those things tend to come out in the open as unconfirmed rumours, and they're generally quite strong. We haven't had any of those. Hopefully on Wednesday, come whatever time the deadline is it 11 o'clock, something like that? Hopefully he'll still be a Reading player because he is, quite frankly, our best central defender by a long way. But yeah, I think, you know, as cover and as a defensive solidity, I think as that goes, I think it's a good signing. I think Elori, as I say, is definitely flattering to deceive. He's certainly more Tyler Blackett than Liam Moore, shall we say, and that he just switches off so incessantly. He's literally an accident waiting to happen, as far as I'm concerned. And so, you know, he's got good pedigree. He's played at this level for a good number of years for Brighton in the past, for Bournemouth, obviously won the championship, as you said, for Villa. So, you know, hopefully he'll form a good partnership with Leo Moore, and we'll at least, you know, instead of conceding two goals a game, we'll be conceding one.
I just think it's such a shame, isn't it, that we spent 3.75 million on Thiago Alori, and once again we've given him time, we've given him, you know, a bit of space to improve. It looks like he's playing in a formation that, on paper at least, would suit him, but it's just not happening. And again, is this something that we have to put down to the manager? Is this something that we put down to the recruitment side, not identifying the right player? It's just sort of so symbolic of the club at the moment that there is money being invested.
Not necessarily not signing the right player, because when we signed Blackett, we needed cover for Jordan Obita. When we signed Elori, we needed cover for McShane and Moore. So they were the right players at the time. I just don't think they've been doing their homework. I mean, surely if you're going to be watching those two players, you look at the traits that they've displayed in the games that they play. If they switch off, and if they keep switching off, which those two players keep doing, is that something that can be coached out of a player? Can they consistently maintain their concentration levels to a degree that isn't going to be costly? And they don't. I wonder... you know, they were both relatively young players, admittedly, and, you know, possibly, you know, you were hoping they were going to learn from their mistakes, but they're not. And they're costing, they have cost us goals this season, both players.
Yeah, they have. And that, does that mean that defence was the issue for you when it comes to the transfer window? As I say, people want a striker. We're, in terms of the statistics you mentioned earlier, we're kind of mid-table defensively. So, I mean, I think this is a good deal. I think Elphick is the type of player who knows the Championship. He's been at a successful team for the last... I mean, Villa were crap last year, but they're good this year. He was at Bournemouth, who were very successful. I think at the end of the day, this is a player who is a good, proven Championship player. He's available. We can start him pretty much straight away. So that, to me, says it is a good deal.
Yeah. Does it say that the defence was the problem? No, it doesn't, because it's absolutely clear that attack is the problem. We scored 14 goals in 14 home games this season. We scored 16 goals away in 14 away games. That's not good enough, quite frankly, for a squad that with the talent and the creative talent that we keep supposedly being told that we have, you know, to have a striker who scored 18 goals last season, admittedly injured for 2-3 months of it, has scored once, and another striker who has barely been given a chance. The biggest issue for me is the attack. We are desperate for that player who can put the ball in the back of the net on a consistent basis, and who can play and bring midfielders and wide players into play to get them into the right position. You know, you have to play off your striker all the time. It is the fundamental position, the key position, the key position for me in any football team, in any football club. And if you haven't got a player who can play that position effectively, or who isn't being given a chance, what's the point in him being here? If he's being overlooked for the likes of the false nine that we played earlier in the season, which evidently didn't work.
I'll go into what Tommy Elphick has said then, since he's joining, just for a little view into his mind. He's saying that learning off the manager, this is a progressive club, and I know we're in a sticky situation at the moment, but it's a club that's going forward still. The club made huge strides forward last year. I remember watching the game at Villa Park, and we got absolutely battered for 90 minutes. Watching it, I wanted to be a part of something like that again, playing that brand of football, and the manager brings that. Which, I mean, it's quite an interesting thought. If he thinks that he's going to be playing like we played at Villa Park last year, winning 3-1 away from home every week, good luck with that.
Somebody's a bloody good salesman, I can tell you, within that club.
Yeah, well, there's some very good PR people doing his quotes for him, basically. So we'll see how Elphick goes. I believe he's in the squad and he's registered for Burton away, and I kind of expect that he'll be starting in that. One man who won't be starting is Adrian Popper. He is a goner. He's off on loan to Al Tawoun of Saudi Arabia. He's still got 2 years left on his contract when he returns in the summer. So, I mean, he's played nine starts for Reading, scored one goal, which was all a bit of a tap in at Sheffield Wednesday. And on Facebook, actually, there's a bit of a negative response to this when we asked fans how they felt about, was Popper given a fair crack at the whip? And I want to know how you feel about that.
I despair. My response to the announcement on the club's Twitter feed was Jean-Luc Picard putting his head in his hands. You know, I just find it absolutely remarkable that Popper is a player who carries with him not just a creative spark, who has Champions League and European Championship international qualities about him, but he carries with him a goal-scoring threat as well. You see in the games that he's played that he consistently gets into positions where he can either strike a goal or potentially put in a dangerous ball. I just despair, because he's one of the most effective wide players we've got at the club. You take a look at what Gareth McCleary has done over the last 12 months, not a huge amount really. You take a look at what Shawnee Aluko has done since he's been here. Thoroughly flattering to deceive. Don't get me wrong, I think he has qualities, Shawnee Aluko. I just don't think we're playing anywhere near to his potential, or allowing him to play anywhere near to his potential. Roy Behrens, I think AD Popper is a significant step up on Roy Behrens, and I like Roy Behrens. I've said before plenty of times, I really like watching his movement. you know, you look at the wide players that we've got, and you'd let an 80 popper go out on loan, and you just think, what on earth are you doing? Seriously, take a look at yourself in the mirror, yeah, for God's sake.
Well, that's the thing. It just seems to me like he doesn't fit the Stan mantra, because we know how much he likes playing Behrens. Popper, he has that sense of me. He is a player who's going to take on players and have a crack from 30 yards, and he'll maybe lose it every now and again. But we don't really have the player who takes on players at the moment, because I don't think that's what Stan wants. Stan wants us to knock it round and everything else that we always discuss, that Popper isn't that sort of player. He offers us something different, and I think that's kind of, as you're saying here, and I mean, I don't think he's a great player. I don't personally think the 9-start stat sort of surprises me. It felt like he's been given more of a chance than that, but I don't think he's been particularly great when he has played for us. But I mean, I have a lot of sympathy with what you're saying. I think the reason...
But he's hardly played, and that's the thing. As a wide player, any player will tell you, you need games to be able to build up a rhythm. And he's been given the odd start here, you know, one or two starts here and there, or 15 minutes here and 20 minutes there, or not even that in some cases. And it's just not enough for, you know, certainly over a period of a year, 12 months, to have just, well, as you say, he's had... what, 14, 16, 16 appearances. It's just not enough when you're playing the best part of 40-odd games, 40, 50 games in that period of time. How can anybody expect him to be, you know, displaying his true potential when, you know, he's been given such sporadic appearances?
Well, that's part of the reason I think he's gone, is because he's the most saleable asset of all the wingers we got. No one's going to buy McCleary off us, certainly on the wages on. No one's going to take Behrens off us, likewise. And you have, you know, Aluko's not going to go anywhere. We just have no one that's worth any money at the moment. And having a Saudi team come in, let's say they're paying his wages, that's probably the reason why he's gone, along with the fact that Stam isn't so keen on him.
Yeah, I suppose you could look at it financially. I mean, we're not exactly in superb shape financially when FFP, you know, gets rolled out. So I suppose it does free up some money, maybe even for a permanent deal for that long wanted striker. But I just think, I mean, obviously, when it comes to players going out, you've got to have a side that wants that's a club that's going to come in and buy. You've basically got to have a buyer, or you've got to have a loaner. And if you haven't got one of those, then you're not going to get rid of a player. Al Tawoon have come in for Popper. And as you say, I suppose you put it like that, he's not getting game time and he needs game time. So we'll see what comes off when he comes back. I have a feeling it's going to end up being more, you know, more along the lines of Danny Carrizo, who went to Sevilla and, basically didn't come back. But we'll see. You know, we'll see. I think we may, if Stam stays as manager, I think we may well have seen the last of AD Popper in a Reading shirt, which is a shame. I don't think we've seen anywhere near enough of him to be able to form a judgment or, you know, to conclude just how good a player he is.
No, I completely agree. If Stam stays as manager, then I don't see a way back for him. But as in terms of the summer, him coming back, maybe a new manager being in charge, there's always a possibility. As I say, he's got 2 years left on his contract, which for someone who's going to be 30 in the summer, just shows how much faith we had in him when we signed him, at least. Let's finish off News Bites with a quick look at the youth teams and other teams of Reading Football Club. The under-23s were in action on Monday night, drawing 0-0 against Wolves in the under-23s Premier League. They are now third in that division, the second division of the Premier League, on 28 points, 2 points off of Villa, now having played the same amount of games, so hopefully something to look forward to there. The under-18s were bottom of the Premier League when we last spoke, but since then they've beaten Leicester and drawn with Brighton, so they're up at 10th now, the under-18s. They have Fulham on Saturday away from home, so something to keep an eye out on there. And the women's team, they have lost their first Continental Cup group game, I think second stage against Arsenal, but they did draw against them on the weekend in the league. And on Sunday at Adams Park is the FA Cup game against Birmingham. So anyone's got anything to do on Sunday, definitely get yourself down to Wickham and check that one out, because if there's not going to be a cup run for the men's team, there may as well be one for the women's team. And we will move on now to the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.
Well, Handbags, there's a controversial, shall we say, email that landed in our desks in the build-up to this podcast, and that's come from Dave Zellerivier, who has said that he enjoyed the Brentford game. He says, and I'm quoting here, "I thought we looked more confident and created some decent chances against a quality Brentford side. The last league game that he went to was Birmingham. Him and his lad walked out gutted that he had lost, or we had lost, to such a poor team. But this was a much better performance against a much better side. Do you think that Brentford were good enough to merit the kind of, you know, we lost but it's okay attitude?"
There's something to be said for the way Brentford play and the way that we played. We always play better when a team comes onto us and actually attacks us, which in some ways works in our favour. It makes us look better, and we did create chances. Let's not ignore that. Like I say, we hit the boat, we hit the bar with a free kick from Kelly. Bob Varson hit the post. Mo Barrow, 10-15 seconds before the Brentford goal, had an opportunity which he should have hit first time. So we certainly did look better, mainly because Brentford played a more expansive game than most teams play when they come to us. You look at, you know, Wolves, they sat back, although, you know, we played well in that game. Cardiff, we actually played well in that game as well, going through these. Bristol City sat back. Fulham obviously sat back. They were down to 10 men after 10 seconds. You know, you look at the teams going down. Brentford didn't sit back, you know, so it was an enjoyable game insofar as there were chances created at either end. And as time goes by, I think, you know, and I've spoken to Billy Grant of Besotted on a couple of occasions before and since, and we've both remarked that under Stam, at least, the games between Reading and Brentford are becoming closer. Last season, we were battered in both games and somehow walked away with the 3-2 victory. Earlier in the season, they were arguably better than us, but we walked away with the 1-1 draw. This time it was a close game. Either side could have won it. Certainly we could have won it if we'd have taken the chances. And I think if we'd have scored first, I think we might well have gone on to win it. But it just never felt that we were going to take a chance. And so I think, you know, on balance, Brentford did have the better chances. The goal that we conceded was a travesty from the 10-15 seconds beforehand. So yeah, they can turn around and say that they probably just about deserved it, but yeah, you know, overall it was, you know, if you're a neutral observer, you know, it's an enjoyable game, because it was good ebb and flow to it, but yeah, we're still on the receiving end.
Well, yeah, absolutely, no doubt, Dave. I mean, comparing it to the Birmingham game, him saying that it was a better performance than the Birmingham game, I have no doubt about that whatsoever, because the Birmingham game, it just sounded to me like it was the real dour nights at the Wydadzki in all regards. And the Brentford game, I suppose, the fact that you're only one goal down always creates a sense of optimism, and there are more chances. It's better one to watch, as you say. So it is that case of ifs and buts, and how we continue to be on the wrong end of them, and whether it's down to luck or down to management, preparation and whatnot, continues to be the debate around the club. Derek Wormsley has asked, is it because we've stopped playing Sweet Caroline? Well, they're playing the Amazons before the game, and as you know, Tarleton's favourite new band is the Amazons, so we're always going to praise our boys in that sense. Michael Kearns has asked, is Tommy what we need? We have kind of covered Elphick, so I'm going to breeze over that one and go to another one that Ben Warden has asked, saying, is Elphick is a good signing in his opinion, but what does this mean for Allori? Provided Moore stays, he can't see him playing too much unless we play a back five or Allori transforms into a Hector-esque central defensive midfielder. I'm not sure Allori has the physicality, the anticipation, or even necessarily the bravery to be a central defensive midfielder.
Good one, that. So he certainly can play the ball, and he can, and he's generally good in the tackle. You know, bringing Michael Hector into the discussion, you're just thinking is the similarities are remarkable, actually. I don't think Allori has the level of potential that Michael Hector had. And it was, you know, if Thiago Allori was sold over the next 2 days, I wouldn't be overly disappointed. I was disappointed when Michael Hector was sold to Chelsea.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it as well, I think.
That's generally the way you look at it. I mean, partly I suppose you could argue that, yeah, Hector was... He was from our academy, and you always have that little bond with a player from your academy. you know, so maybe there's a little bit of that to it, a little bit of nostalgia and one of your own to it. But yeah, the point still stands. If Ilori was sold tomorrow, I wouldn't be that disappointed.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel if Ilori went. I think it would be a financial decision, effectively, for me. I'd have to say, well, you know, all the money we spent on him, we're going to get some of that back, basically. Because he is, I mean, what we said last year was that the players that we are signing, and maybe that's not so much over the summer, but the players we're signing, such as Liam Moore, Ilori, obviously, these players all had resale value, and that was kind of one of the benefits to it. I wonder if that's now kind of being lost in a large sense of the word.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, you say they have resale value, and they've also, you also have to question just how ready they were for the first team. The players that we've generally brought in needed game time, and you know, Adey Popper being obviously another point. Thiago Ilori, Tyler Blackett, Callum Harriott,
John Swift,
Yaku Mate, Joseph Mendes. They were all players that needed game time, and they've had it sporadically, but they haven't had it consistently. And that's you know, bearing itself out now, that they're not actually, they haven't progressed to the level that we expected them to. You look at the ones that we've got at the moment, Pala Clement, Bob Varson. You know, the only ones of this season that we've getting consistent game time are Edwards, Bacuna, Barrow, and Manone. We've got Bob Varson and Clement who have come in, who have had sporadic efforts. Clement, I think, is potentially one for the future. But Bodvarsson needs, you know, he needed to be starting every game at the start of the season, because he was literally our only fit striker. Other than Sam Smith, who Stan was evidently reluctant to play, and actually didn't disgrace himself in the league games that he's played. Let's put that out there. Of course, who's the other youngster? Danny Loader, who I think isn't quite first team ready. But, you know, he's in and around the first team. So, you know, he's the sort of player, and this is where the argument for youth comes in. He's the sort of player that now needs to start getting minutes. Ideally, when we're 2-0 up with 10 or 5 minutes to go, but if we're 1-0 down, throw him on. You know, what have you got to lose, you know, going one into that, you know, period of time? You never know, he might just pull out a little bit of magic, you know, the unknown quantity. So the players that we've got, that we brought in, very, very few of them are actually getting the number of minutes that they actually require to be able to display their full potential. And that's frustrating, because we've signed them on, you know, a lot of money.
I do agree with you. I agree with you in the sense that, yes, Danny Loader playing, Sam Smith, I do want to see these guys on the pitch, but there's that nagging sense in me that when a team's not doing very well, when a manager says, well, we're losing, but I'm playing the kids, it's kind of like, it's 6-1, half dozen the other. We're trying this and it's not working, but at least we're trying it. So we haven't actually had Stam come out and say, well, at least I'm playing the kids yet. So maybe he'll resort to that, and then we'll get the vote of total confidence from the board, and we really know that then he is getting sacked. But that certainly doesn't seem to be happening just yet. Final question then from Alex Everson. He's saying that if we're going to stay up, which three teams do you think are worse than Reading and that will go down in our stead? Burton? Burton are bottom at the moment, but I don't actually think Burton will go down.
Just looking at the table now, Burton, you've got...
They've got that canny knack.
They have, and they've got a canny manager. They've got quality in certain areas of the pitch. I'm sounding like Yap Stam now. They have quality out wide. They certainly have. I can't think of his name. Been around the block. Was at Leicester, West Brom. Can't remember. Lloyd Dyer. You look at the players that they've got. You know, John Brayford. You're looking at Sean Barker, if and when he plays. Sean Scannell, Lloyd Dyer. Dare I say it? Hope Akpan, Marvin Sordell.
Joe Mason as well up front now, I think.
Darren Bent. They've just signed Darren Bent.
Yes, they have.
And that, you know, they've had Stephen Warnock there. You know, they've got good quality. Stephen Bywater in goal has been around the block. They've got good quality, you know, that in areas of the pitch. I think it's more, you know, you'd look at their side, And it's, you think it's more in club attitude about where they actually are in the grand scheme of things, the way they set up, or, as opposed to the quality that they have on the pitch. You know, I do think they should be going to, they should have been coming to somewhere like Reading and actually not playing expansive football, but playing a little bit more openly than they actually did. As it was, they ended up winning the poxy game at our place. But, you know, I think that, you know, they've got quality in certain areas of the pitch that you know, suggests to me that they've got a fighting chance. You know, of course they've got a fighting chance. They're only 1 point outside the relegation zone. Birmingham are still struggling to score goals. They comfortably beat us, but I do think that for them to stay up, they're starting to get it together now. That they're running off the back of that win at our place. But at the same time, you look at them, they've only scored 16 goals all season in 28 games. They've only won six, which is all right. It's only one less than us. I don't think they have the goals in their squad. Sunderland, I'm not entirely convinced Cookie Coleman was the right appointment there. Hull, struggling there. Bolton, again, you know, actually, you look at some of these, some of the sides that we're playing. I think QPR could be dragged into it. Forest, I think, are now looking, you know, Forest are 10 points clear, and I think they're safe. They've got a good, steady manager in charge of them now. They're now into mid table. So the teams down that are potentially worse than us, I mean, I'm not going to say that on paper, though, I don't think they are, but I think Sunderland are in a right old hole at the moment. Birmingham don't have the goals. And you know, I haven't mentioned much of them at the moment, but Barnsley are starting to really struggle now. You know, look at their form at the moment, and they're right down the bottom. I think they've won one. Let's look at this: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 1 in 15 they've won, so they're really struggling. Well, that's only one of those is a cup game, and that was a 4-1 defeat at Millwall. So
yeah, I think Barnsley are a team that I fully expect to be down there at the end of the season. They keep selling all their best players. Certainly last season had a very good team, sold a lot of their players. Birmingham, I agree, I think they'll be down there. Sunderland, I just have a nagging fear that they're going to save themselves, which could be to our detriment.
They will get into a situation, it'll be in the middle of the middle of March or the beginning of March or whatever, and suddenly they'll have a big, big result. They'll grind a result out from somewhere, and it's the sort of thing that galvanises a massive club like that at this level. You found it with Birmingham 2 or 3 years, I think 2014. You found it with Newcastle in the early 90s. You know, you generally get a club at that level. They tend to drag themselves clear. So I do fear for Burton, but they've got the quality to get themselves out of it. Birmingham don't have the goals, and Barnsley are dropping like an absolute stone. I think we'll be safe, but carry on the way we are, it's going to be a close run thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of very mediocre clubs manage to survive in every league, no matter what level you get them at. And I think Reading will just be about that team this year. My three to go down for what it's worth. I think Barnsley, Bolton as well, we haven't discussed, but I just think they are the club that just has absolutely everything go against them. And I see them, you know, last day of the season, maybe Sunderland will get a last minute penalty or something, and they'll stay up. And I think Birmingham will be joining Barnsley and Bolton to go down.
The thing with Bolton, I mean, we haven't mentioned much about them. I think with them, that if Parkinson plays to their strengths, they play a very direct style of football, which is limited at this level, tends to get found out. That's why they are where they are. But they've got good players. David Wheater at the back. They've got Andrew Taylor, who obviously we know here. Will Buckley is a good player. Sammy Amiobi, Jem Karachan, we know how good he is. Darren Prattley, Felipe Moraes, Carl Henry, you know, these are all players that are out. They've got Alfie. These are all players that have been around the block, know how to get themselves up for a game and into a battle. And they haven't lost too many games by big margins this season. Generally by one or two goals. All right, they've had a massive defeat at Hull. All right, admittedly, they also lost massively to Middlesbrough. But, you know, they've had two or three hammerings, but they're generally lost by the odd goal in two or three. But they've won 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They've won 8 games, and they've given themselves a fighting chance. And, you know, they've got a slightly tougher run than you'd expect it. But, you know, you look, going into, you know, from April, you're looking, they've got Bolton, they've got Birmingham at home, Derby away is a tough one, obviously, but then they've got Millwall at home, Barnsley away, Wolves at home, which again is a tough one, but then they've got Burton away and Forest at home, who presumably, unless they go on some stonking run of form, will have nothing to play for. So that's quite a kind run-in with the exception of Derby and Wolves. So with that, you'd think they're going to be, you know, they're going to be having more than a fighting chance of being safe.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Wolves will probably have nothing to play for by that time of the season as well. Probably be a good time to play them. I think, yeah, I just had a look then. Karachan hasn't played for Bolton since the end of September. I just find that very, very strange that he's been cast aside so much there. If it helps them with their form, fair enough, but be nice to see Jem Karachan doing a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, and they went there in the middle of about a year ago, wasn't it? And did rather well there. I think he played five games and they won every single game. Convincingly as well. 4-2, 4-0, 4-2, 2-0, 3-0. So he obviously got his contract on the back of that. But I don't understand, you know, given that he's got a championship winner's medal, quite what, you know, What's going on there? But, you know, Park is an experienced manager. He knows what he wants, and he obviously has a midfield that doesn't involve him. So,
no doubt there are plenty of Reading fans listening to this now saying they'd happily sign him up for a good go in this team. And, well, I'm not going to disagree with them at this stage. Sentimentality is probably one of the only things we've got left to hold on to. And we will have to move on and end the show then with any other business as we look ahead to a game against Burton and a game against Millwall.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
So, Handbags, without cheating, I want you to tell me the last time that Burton won a game at the Pirelli Stadium.
I think they've only won twice at home this season, haven't they?
Yeah, that's correct.
Am I right in thinking it might have been live on Sky against Birmingham, and I think it was a 2-1 win?
They might well have beaten Birmingham, but they've more recently, I think more recently indeed.
They did beat Birmingham. I know they beat Birmingham, but I wonder if that was the last time. Let's have a look. Go on. Put me out of my misery.
That wasn't the last, most recent. I think that was the first time they did, because on September 16th, they beat Fulham 2-1. And since then, they have not won a single game at home in league or whatever you want to call it, cup competition. They've drawn 0-0 with Norwich since that, but in the intermediate time, they've lost to Villa, Wolves, Ipswich, Barnsley, Sheffield United, Sunderland, Preston, Leeds and QPR. This is a team that are not good at home. That's a fact. Reading go though on Tuesday, 7:45 kickoff. We do like being the nice team that breaks these runs, don't we?
We do, yes. Which worries me, of course. But at the same time, having lauded them a little bit earlier... football isn't a game that's played on paper, it's played on grass. But if you gave me the 11 players that we've got versus the 11 players that they've got, I would expect us to win convincingly. But this is Reading, side that have won 7 games in 28 league. That's league games. That doesn't include the cup games. Well, I think it's 1 game in 11 in all competitions. Can you honestly see us getting anything?
I can see you'd us like getting something. I mean, this has 0-0 draw written all over it for me. I'm not going to lie.
You know, it has 1-0 defeat written all over it for me, because we just don't score enough goals. We don't create enough chances, and we are committing catastrophic errors that are punishing us at the moment. I know it's all very, very pessimistic at the moment. And you know, if you'd have asked me this 2 months ago, I'd have been saying, yeah, we'll go there and we'll probably win 3-0. And particularly after that game against Sunderland. But, you know, football changes in a short space of time. Make no bones about it, as I said earlier, it is must win. We've got to go there. We've got to play our A game, play with intensity, get the ball moving quickly, using the quality that we've got. Because I genuinely believe that our attacking force is better than their defensive force. And get the win that we needed, that will hopefully kickstart this season. They have a minus 31 goal difference, by the way, as well. And that's minus 18 at home. So they've lost 10 at home. They've only picked up points in 4 games at home this season. If we don't go and win this, then I'm sorry. Then it will have to be curtains for Mr. Stam, because if we don't go and win this game, bearing in mind that we've already lost to them in dismal fashion, we've lost to Birmingham in dismal fashion, we're losing games left, right, and centre in dismal fashion, with the exception of Brentford, which was, you know, we put up a bit of a fight. I mean, enough of the support has turned on the manager. For the club to have to sit up and take notice. And I don't believe they're not. But is it enough? I think if we lose to Burton, then I think the daggers will be out.
Well, that was my next question for you, is do you see, not necessarily what you want to happen, but do you think that a genuine reality scenario can unfold, by which means we lose to Burton or we don't beat them? Do you actually think that Yap Stam will be going, or will it just be a case of us being as it is at the moment? Because we've discussed Stam so many times on this podcast, and honestly, I've got on the website as well, we had so many articles about, you know, yes, no, this is maybe this is the best thing to do, this is the best thing to do. We've just gotten to a stage where we're almost kind of bored of it with the Yap Stam in out argument. It's just been so it's just so dragged on, and it's actually just becoming a bit of a sideshow, a bit of an irrelevance. But
no, it's Reading Football Club way, death by boredom, isn't it?
Do you think this will be the moment?
If we lose against Burton and he remains in his job, up next, as you say, and I'm going to move this on slightly, we've got Millwall. You look at Millwall's away form this season. They've won once away from home all season. And who was that against? See if you can come up with the answer.
Was it Burton? Not Burton, surely.
I'm just looking, actually. I'm doubting myself. Guess what? it was last week against Leeds.
Oh, yes, of course. Their 4-3 triumphant comeback. So we're facing a team that has just about found some form at the right time.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but they've still only won once all season, but they are a tough nut to crack. They have only conceded 18 goals away. They've only scored 10 at home, which, you know, isn't really much better than our home form of 14 scored and 18 conceded.
The two of those 10 were in the last minute against us as well, weren't they?
That was away. That's the away form.
Ah, sorry.
Home form, yeah, they scored 23 at home.
Oh,
they've won 7. They only lost 3.
I lost then.
So, And you know what I'm like for historical statistics. They've actually only ever won once at the Medeski as well. Funnily enough, that was 4-3. That was in 2001. They have, I think their record at the Medeski is now something like lost 8, lost 9, something like that. They haven't drawn, I think.
They took us to extra time in the League Cup this year, didn't they?
They did, but they still lost 3-1.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a graveyard ground for them historically. And you know how these things happen in football. You know, you have to take each individual game as a 90 minutes, but sometimes circumstances dictate that a side just continually lose. You know, take QPR at Forest, for example, or take West Brom against Stoke. You know, West Brom always lose to Stoke. QPR always lose at the City Ground. Millwall, all by once, always lose at the Medeski. Now, that's obviously nothing to go by in terms of the 90 minutes that's coming up, but they've won once all season. But I just worry that they have a couple of wily strikers in Lee Gregory and, more importantly, Steve Morrison, who know how to bully players. They're very direct, but they have good qualities, good battling qualities, typical Millwall qualities, you could call them. Their fans love a battler. And if they go in, you know, 100% as they're expected to, you know, as their fans expect, their fans will back them. And they'll bring about 1,500, probably, you know, maybe 2,000 to our place. It won't be a particularly nice atmosphere, particularly if we've lost to Burton. And if we then go on and lose to Millwall, then, you know, if he hasn't gone by Burton, he will have to go after Millwall. It's simple as that. It'll be one win in 13. And that's more than enough to finish a manager of a side that is looking increasingly like it. You know, it is more than conceivable we would be in the relegation zone at that point. And Ron Gourlay would have to eat his words. He would have to eat his words and let Yap Stam go. Simple as that.
Yeah, dropping into the relegation zone might just be that final sort of straw that broke the camel's back. I'm not going to say that I believe he will go after that. I completely agree with your sentiment. I just... I mean, we've just seen it for so long. It feels like even if it has only been one sort of period of a few months, there is also one player that you've forgotten that will be turning up or is set to turn up for Millwall on Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff at the Badesky Stadium, and that is one Mr. Tim Cahill, who is seemingly on his way back to Millwall. And I'm not sure that I want to be there for his inauguration parade as he returns and triumphantly scores the last minute winner for Millwall. It's almost written in the stars. Although, that said, Millwall host Derby in midweek. They've got a cup replay to contend with. So maybe their mind will just be off us. Maybe it'll be the ideal time to bring in a new manager. Who knows? It's Burton, obviously, first on Tuesday night. Prediction league-wise, Tom Crocker is miles ahead of anyone else. 5 points clear of Wim.
I'm doing a Leicester in my title challenge again, aren't I? Or my title defence, should I say.
Well, you've had three results in a row. You've not got the scoreline, but you've said win, loss or draw correctly three goes in a row now. So am I right in saying that you're going to go for your aforementioned 1-0 defeat against Burton?
No, I don't. I can see that happening, but I actually... Do you know what? I'm going to go positive. I'm going to go 2-0 win.
Right, well,
I'm going to go 2-0 win.
I'm going to have to stick with my 0-0 because it just overwhelms me, the feeling that we're going to end up with a 0-0 draw, and it's really going to tell us absolutely nothing on Tuesday night, such is the way with things at the moment. Millwall, I mean, you can amend this after the Burton game by all means, but as you're sitting there now, how do you feel like that will go?
Well, if we beat Burton, I think we'll go on to beat Millwall. I think we will go 2-1 win.
Yeah, see, we do.
But yes, I do reserve the right to amend that.
Oh, absolutely. We do have a happy knack against Millwall. I'm going to go for a 1-0 win against Millwall. But to be honest, that is almost certainly going to get amended depending on how the Burton game goes, who's the manager is, who we've signed as well, because it is deadline day on Wednesday, I believe. So keep your eyes peeled onto the Tarlest End. We'll have absolutely everything covered. And if nothing happens, then, you know, just enjoy the ride as we'll poke fun of it along with you. And that's it for episode 151 of the Tarlest End podcast. Then cheers for joining us. How bags?
No problem at all. A pleasure, as ever.
And it's always a pleasure having you on and a pleasure having you guys joining us, listening to the show. It's always appreciated. We'll be back with the podcast extra, which I believe Ollie and Tom are now going to start recording on Thursdays, and they'll be previewing the Millwall game. We'll be back next week talking about what's unfolded. There is actually quite a lot of chance that things will be changing around the club in the next few days. So keep an eye on the Tarlest End, keep an eye on all things Reading, and we'll be back in a week's time discussing what has gone on. It's hard, but come on, you Rs. You smile.